There are several things this biography of Allen Ginsberg isn't. It isn't an act of criticism, a work of scholarship, or a history of the feverish times. I'm not sure Barry Miles is interested in modern poetry and the literary culture that bent, spindled, and mutilated the poet. And he's missed the point of Ginsberg's civil libertarian anarchistic politics. That's the bad news. The good news is that Miles is a British buddy, a kind of superfan, with access to Ginsberg's diaries, an editor who's looked at every piece of paper that ever crossed the poet's desk, a mole in an archival treasure trove, and a wonderful storyteller. We meet the gentle poet father, Lewis, and the crazy communist mother, Naomi. We grow up in New Jersey with a kid whose favorite writer was Poe, whose favorite book was Dr. Doolittle. We accompany this kid to Columbia, where he met and slept with Kerouac, William Burroughs, and Neil Cassidy, where he confounded Lionel Trilling. We smoke his pot when he writes a paper on Cezanne for Meyer Shapiro, when God talks back to him through William Blake, when he ships out with the Merchant Marine. We're there on North Beach for Howell, in Tangier for Burroughs, morphine, and a machete, in Machu Picchu when God talks to him again after the death of his mother and tells him to love women, in Castro's Cuba where they kicked him out for thinking too much about drugs and homosexuality, in London, Moscow, Budapest, Jerusalem, and Chicago 68, hobnobbing with the Stones, the Beatles, and R.D. Lang, writing lyrics for Bob Dylan and the Clash, turning on Robert Lowell to LSD, phoning Henry Kissinger in the White House, telling Ezra Pound, "But I'm a Buddhist Jew," composing Kaddish, loving Peter, hating cocaine, becoming, with a Pulitzer, respectable. It's a portrait of the angel-headed hipster as a social bandit, like Rob Roy, Pancho Villa, and Mack Heath. When the alarm bell rang to end the 1950s snooze, for many it was Elvis, but for some of us it was Ginsberg. Not because of the sex, or drugs, or spiritual push-ups, but because of his other America, an alternative nation of Tom Mooney, Sacco and Vanzetti, the Scottsboro Boys and the Wobblies, all of Moloch's children. If he went away in the early 60s, washed up desolate on a Ganges bank, vegetarian and silent, he returned in time for the levitation of the Pentagon, the convention in Chicago, Judge Hoffman's kangaroo court, Bill Buckley's firing line, ban the bomb, hands off Nicaragua. He was a one-man counterculture, a bridge between the yippie media brats and the new left Little League Leninists in our second Civil War. Like his friend Walt Whitman, this lonely old courage maker nursed our wounds. Imagine a non-violent social bandit like Dr. King and Joan Baez, an incorruptible pacifist even when it hurt, sending up his alms, his toy balloons, against the techno-structured superstate. He emerges from these sports pages as a magical, bandit, subversive nurse, defending the self from a devouring society. The only poetic tradition, he has said, is the voice out of the burning bush. But there's another tradition, equally metrical, mystical, manly, and no less honorable in a dishonest time. There is, he is, the medicine man.